think Tevez going to Juventus, what a coup that was for me. I mean,
on a head-to-head battle, Atletico Madrid can do more damage to Barcelona than the other way around.
Either he's really blind, or he's fixing the match. I can't see it any other way.
I'm trying to get Sir Bob on my side here by saying City will win the Premier League.
It is an upset. You would expect Man United to go and win there.
Over $1 billion was paid in transfer fees between the clubs in Europe.
It's football. It's damn football. Like Ferguson said, football. Bloody marvellous.
Yeah, well, the celebration was, I can't believe I just scored against Mexico.
At one point, Parma, I think it's only like 224 players under contract.
So they're going to throw me out of here, fellas. You're going to get me arrested on your show.
If you're a serious talent, you're going back and you're playing for Santos. You know, you're going back to play for, like, in Argentina for River Plate or Boca Juniors, or you're going to Europe.
He looked like the Ryan Giggs of old. He was more creative than any player on the pitch. He made Mata look stupid. He made Rooney look silly.
Now, the Premier League is what the most exciting league out there. I think it's probably the best marketed league without a question.
When you look at the draw for the Champions League, you kind of say, well, all the pieces kind of fell into place for everybody except City.
I am your host, Joe Uccello.
Sir Bob, Mike Orr. My co-host, Rob Rojas.
My trusted co-host, Ben the Machine.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to episode 242 of Low Limit Football on this 13th of May, 2019, on the Beyond the Pitch and FNX Media Networks. I'm your host, Joe Uccello, and tonight, the finals are set in the Champions League and Europa League, and in spite of Brexit, the European Championship matches are all English. Speaking of English, we'll look back at the dramatic Sunday to decide the EPL title. Is England red? Is it blue? We're going to definitely discuss that. Antonio Conte has been linked with yet another big team in Italy, making it 4 teams in 4 weeks. Where is he going to go, and is there a shortage of extra special talent in world coaching? We're going to talk about that tonight. And with this weekend's results, the final match day of the Bundesliga could be the most exciting of all title races. We're going to explain that and much, much more with our special guest, Mr. Alex Schaefer, content manager for Bundesliga in English tonight and in just a little while. But Mr. Roberto Rojas, how was graduation, brother? And congratulations, man.
Thank you. It was hot, actually, because even though it was like, Joe, obviously we're both in Connecticut, obviously the last few 24, 48 hours have been awful in terms of weather, but Oh my God, the second that was all over and like you're like in a packed arena of like 8,000 people and you're outside, even though it's pouring rain, you're like, thank God it's all over. And thank you so much. I'm very happy. Time goes by fast. I had like a, as you said, graduated from Sacred Heart University with a double major in communication and media arts. Excuse me if my voice is a little bit off tonight because the last few days have been, oh my God, incredible. We'll keep it as a not safe. We'll just keep it as a with PG-13 as we could for tonight. But I'll leave it at that. It was great. And I'm staying here and we're still doing the show and I'm really excited to speak to someone that actually we haven't had in a long time.
True. Very true. I mean, back to your graduation, though, it's just like the mafia with college. Every time you try to get out, they pull you back in because Now you're off to grad school. I want to go back to what you said. Alex Schaefer is somebody that we had on quite a while back, back in 2015. And somehow we've never connected back to him to have him on. And with all the drama that happened this weekend in the Bundesliga and with the focus on this weekend with Bayern Munich and Borussia Dortmund and the matches they're going to play for the title and the teams are going to play in Mönchengladbach and Eintracht Frankfurt, teams that are battling for those European positions, you know, as exciting as this weekend's title race was between Liverpool and City, it kind of went the way you expected it to go because of the opponents, right? I mean, we had Brighton playing Manchester City. You would have expected City to run over them
2-0, 3-1, 4-1. It was 4-1. And then you fast forward to Liverpool and Wolves. Wolves, obviously a much, much tougher opponent. But at the same time, somebody that won, Liverpool should have handled at Anfield. But if they didn't, it wouldn't matter because City was going to handle their business, or you expected them to, against a team that just avoided relegation. And so for a brief, what, seven-minute stretch on Sunday after on Sunday morning, we had excitement, right? We had a Liverpool lead. We had a Brighton lead. And we had the what ifs happening, and then City remembered who they were, took over, and you know, obviously we'll talk about that a little bit more in a few minutes. But this weekend's Bundesliga is going to be, for me, I think, in my opinion, it's going to be way more exciting because the teams that are facing the top two teams have something serious to play for, as well as some of the other teams in the league. So we're going to talk about that with Alex in a few minutes. Rob, let's get into it. I have the honor of trivia tonight, my friend. And if you don't mind, I'd like to give it to you.
Let's do it.
All right. So with Champions League and Europa League spots decided in an all-England final in both competitions, I thought back to myself, in the modern era of these competitions, how many times have we seen two teams from the same country contest the final, both in the Champions League and the Europa League? And has it ever happened that we've had four teams, two and two, like we do this year, from the same country doing it in the same year? So my question to you, Rob, is how many times before has it happened in the Champions League era, so since 1992, okay, that we've had two teams from the same country contest the final in the Champions League? And in, okay, the Europa League, which the Europa League era is 1998, how many times have we had two teams from the same country contest the final there as well? And you know, obviously not counting Chelsea, Arsenal this year, and Liverpool, Spurs. So those are out. So that's the question. And we'll come back to it. And I've got a couple little breakdowns on that as well. But how many times has it happened, two teams, same country in Champions League era, 1992? And how many times has it happened in the Europa League since 1998? And has it ever happened where it's been at the same time?
Okay. All right.
Great. Let's go. Let's get into opening thoughts. And opening thoughts tonight, my friend, as I alluded to a little bit, was the Premier League final match day yesterday, which we saw the contested final between Manchester City and Brighton and Hove Albion, and on the other side we saw the Wolves and match at Anfield versus Liverpool. City with a 4-1 victory over their opponents, Brighton and Hove Albion, on the road, which then left the Liverpool result a moot point, although Liverpool did win 2-0. And we have your champion, Manchester City, the first team, I believe, in 10 years to repeat as title holders in the EPL. We saw a three-way tie, if I remember correctly, Rob, for the goal-scoring title between Mohamed Salah, Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang, and Sadio Mane. I did see pictures of Aubameyang receiving a golden boot. I don't know if the same was done for...
Yeah, they did for Mane, they did for Salah, but what an incredible achievement, Joe. I mean, three African players in the Premier League being the top goal scorer. That's incredible.
Amazing. First English player, first European player is Jamie Vardy at number five. Sergio Aguero finished fourth, one goal behind the leaders there. So to give you the top 10 would be Vardy, Sterling, Harry Kane at seventh, Eden Hazard at eighth, Callum Wilson at ninth, and Paul Pogba tied with a slew, including Alexander Lacazette, Raul Jimenez. There's a few other names here.
First time in 20 years, actually, that the Golden Boot was shared by three players.
Amazing, amazing feat. And keep in mind, Rob, both goals in the Liverpool match, both scored by Sadio Mane. I believe Aubameyang had a brace for Arsenal against Burnley, right, in the 3-1 match?
That's right.
Yep, he did score the last two goals, So really, this was Salah's to lose, and you've got two guys behind you scoring two goals to catch up to you. Sergio Aguero only managed one goal in the 4-1 victory over Brighton and Hove Albion, and in the end, we have a three-way tie for the top goal scorer. Rob, I want to get your thoughts on everything, whether it be the goal scorers, whether it be the title race, the championship. This is the highest total ever for second place ever in the top five leagues in Europe, besting by one point the, I want to say it was 2003, 2004, Barcelona team that finished first to Real Madrid, finishing second.
Yep, I remember that.
Okay. I believe that was also a year that Barca won the treble. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Yes, I believe you're correct on that.
So, I mean, there's a lot of history that goes with this final. It's not something that has never happened before, because we saw it as recently as last year, where a team like Napoli finishes with 91 points and still finished second to then 7-time champion, now 8-time champion Juventus. So this is something that has happened in the past. But to see two teams who really did not blink at all, I would say, over the last 14 matches of the season is something amazing, Rob. So I wanted to get your thoughts on the title race, what we've got for Champions League, and all of it for the EPL.
Yeah, just going back to the goal, Golden Boot, actually. Even though they all scored the same goals, 22 is actually one of the lowest in a long time. 22 goals, a number that hasn't been as low as in 2011. Tevez scored 20 goals. Berbatov in 2011 scored 20 goals, so it's one of the lowest in recent memory. Mm-hmm. So, but if you actually look at all the game, all the players, and how many games that they scored, Salah scored 22 and 38. Mane and Aubameyang both hold the same ratio. They did it in 22 and 36. Mm-hmm. So it's but still, hey, they still have the Golden Boot. I think for Salah, it's incredible to win back-to-back Golden Boots. Right. I think for him that's a remarkable achievement. Not a lot of players have done that in recent Premier League history. But yeah, it's been an amazing race so far. I mean, it's been incredible to see two teams who, you know, have been fighting it until the very end. One of the most exciting Premier League races of recent memory, the most exciting ever. But you just have to feel for Liverpool, unfortunately. And like I said, in previous interviews and previous shows, you know, this title would have meant much more for Liverpool if they were to win it. Obviously, they have another competition they have to worry about that we'll get to in a minute. But it's just cruel. Just think about that for a second. City wins the Premier League, 32 wins, 2 draws, 4 losses.
Right.
Liverpool finished in second with 97, 30 wins, 7 draws, 1 loss. I mean, that's just a big blow. I mean, you would think now that these draws feel like losses at this point. I mean, you would think that they're supposed to help you because they gain you one more point, in comparison to what you might lose in two. But it's unreal. I mean, it's incredible. But it's been a fascinating race. I think when you look at all the teams that deserve to be in that spot, we already have the 4 teams that are in the Champions League. I think it was kind of expected. I think that big race was always going to be between Arsenal, United, and Spurs for the final Champions League spot. It did end up going to Spurs. And then we got Arsenal and Manchester United teams who are coming in different directions. You know, Arsenal coming with the new manager, Unai Emery. Obviously, different expectations in comparison to Manchester United, who had Jose Mourinho. And now we're going to Solskjaer. So it's been a fascinating race. I've enjoyed it. It's been great to see so many, you know, remarkable goals. We saw some records in here, Joe, actually. Mm-hmm. We saw the fastest goal in history, scored by Shane Long. It only took 6.9 seconds. Mm-hmm. We saw the youngest ever player to play in the Premier League, Harvey Elliott of Fulham, age 16, born on the 4th of April of 2003. Okay. It's been great. It's been fascinating, and I hope that. Oh, and of course, we have to send a special message to Alisson for best goalkeeper. Mm-hmm. A lot of things have been said about him. Many people want to put him as the best goalkeeper in the world, in the Premier League. I think this one rightly deserved, and you have to think about it, Joe. I mean, he's basically a player. You know, starts for Brazil. But he's essentially becoming the best goalkeeper consecutively in 2 different leagues. That's incredible.
True. Very true. Mason Greenwood on the weekend became the youngest player ever to start at Manchester United, 17 years old. That's another, you know, it's a club record, but obviously with a club like Manchester United, you know, a massive feat, don't you think?
Tremendously.
Yeah.
Tremendously.
And I want to, you know, good friend of the show, good friend of mine, Jerome Cordero sent me a note earlier in the week, and the note read, of the top 6 teams in the EPL this season, right? 2 of them are playing in the Champions League final, 2 are playing in the Europa League final, and 2 are in Manchester. I don't know if that's a good thing or not, but think about this, you know, with the season that they've had, the EPL season, 3 of the 4 Champions League teams are from London, right?
Yeah. No, incredible. I think it just proves more about that whole debate of them being the best league in the world. And I think now, in demonstration of what they've been able to achieve, especially in European competition, I think that debate's been rising up much, much more, and it's even given the benefit of the doubt of that motto.
Yeah, but let me ask you this. I think you bring up a great point because, I thought about this. You know, I would agree. This year, the best league, for the most part, has been the EPL. You cannot argue with the European results. Period. End of story. Right. I mean, that is what it is. But at the same time, when we turned around last season or 2 years ago or 3 years ago and we talked about La Liga being the best league, it tended to be argued against, right? That everyone still went to the EPL, but you couldn't argue with the results. Where we were putting in two teams from La Liga into the Champions League and then a third team from La Liga was winning Europa League. So, you know, I think for the same reasons we argued against or we argued for La Liga, I think this year those reasons need to be translated over to the EPL. And I think for this year, yes, the EPL was probably the best league in all of Europe. I know there are other metrics, but, you know, the eye test for me would say that, yeah, this year is definitely the EPL. And we'll have to see. I mean,
we have to see if this consistency stays.
Yes.
I think when you look at Spain, you know, I was looking at that. You were talking about how, you know, Spanish teams were dominating the Champions League for the last 4 or 5 years. I think that has to be made and said for England. If they can keep that consistency, then obviously that motto and that argument of them being the best league in the world is going to make much more sense.
I agree. No doubt about it. So from this standpoint on, I mean, obviously we still have an FA Cup final, which I believe is City versus Wolves, right?
Right.
City have also won the Carabao Cup. So it looks like they're going to possibly or more than likely probably pull off the domestic treble. Would you say that let's look at it from the two teams that are at the top, right? Because those are going to be the teams that we're going to focus on. So far, City have won two titles. They've put two trophies into the case. Odds are they're going to put a third, one of them being the EPL title. Is this, would you consider this season a success for Manchester City?
Now that he's won the Premier League, yes, you could say that because that's always been the expectation.
Okay. So,
but you have to also make an argument of where they failed in the Champions League. So obviously you would have to put their rating up. And it's incredible. There are teams in the world that are going to win domestic doubles. And or even trebles for that sense, but their season is going to be failing because of things in Europe.
Right. I agree with you 100%. This is kind of my point. It's like, you know, we look at this and we look at City and what they wanted to do, you know, favorites to win the Champions League, all of that stuff, European glory, and they didn't make it to the semifinals. So, you know, from that standpoint, Is that a success or a failure? You know, you have to kind of weigh that. This is the same way that I personally weigh Juventus. For me, they've won two titles this year. Complete failure for me. Okay, but so this is the thing, and this is the question you kind of want to ask the City fans. Has this season been a success or has it been a failure? Let's go to the flip side. Let's go to Liverpool. Liverpool not able to hold on to that title since they were leading since December, if you remember correctly. So that's a massive blow for them. But obviously they're in the Champions League final. I would say they're the odds on favorite to win the Champions League over Tottenham Hotspur. They're going to return what would be probably the biggest trophy in club football, in my opinion, in the Champions League title, the one with the big ears, right? But many would see this Liverpool season as a failure as well, which, again, we debated it last week on the show. I get it. I understand the reasoning that they want to win the EPL title. It's more important to their fans. It's more important to the club because they haven't won that title yet. But my God, this is the Champions League, man. I mean, if Liverpool win this title, is this a success or a failure?
Success.
I agree.
Success. I agree. They returned something, and better to return the biggest trophy in the sport than nothing at all.
I'm going to ask you one more, and then I'm going to go add our guest in here because I want your opinion on this. I'm going to ask you one more team, success or failure.
Okay.
Tottenham Hotspur.
success. They exceeded expectations in that sense.
I agree. I completely agree. And I'm going to tell you, for me, why I agree. I agree because they spent $0. That's it. Plain and simple. They spent $0 in the transfer window. They put out no money, and here they are in the finals of the biggest tournament out there. So I think it's a massive, massive success for them personally. And Rob, I want to make sure that I still have you here, you know, just to make sure I can still hear you. So for me, I think it's a massive success for them, whether they win the Champions League title or not. It's still for me a success. And Pochettino is going to get the eyes of a lot of people, which I think we'll talk about a little later on the show. But Rob, let's drop the EPL for a while and the Champions League for a while, because I think for me, we have a much, much, much bigger race, a much more exciting final week in store for us in the Bundesliga. So joining us now on Low Limit Football, the content manager for Bundesliga in English, Mr. Alex Schaefer. Alex, welcome back to the show, my friend. It has been far too long. How have you been?
It has been far too long, and what a perfect time for me to come back, eh? Oh, good to be back.
Exciting. I mean, exciting is the short answer to it. It's something that if you're not going to be watching the Bundesliga this weekend, you're crazy, because if you felt that this weekend's EPL matches were out of this world and was exciting, you've got something in store for you on the weekend. But before I go there, I was told by a good friend, a couple of good friends, that I want your opinion on Leeds United.
Ah, yes. my boys, yes.
Yeah, currently up 1-0 on Derby.
Yeah, we're 1-0 up from the first leg. Second leg on Wednesday evening for me. So middle of the afternoon, I guess, for you guys, just after midday. Mm-hmm. But I think it's just been such a long time since Leeds were even in contention to go up into the Premier League that I'm just so nervous about everything. I mean, we totally, as we would say from Britain, we totally bottled our chances of getting automatic promotion when we really should have been in the top two. And now it looks like we'll be able to get to the final, at least of the playoffs. But it's you just never know this club, which is why I love supporting them, because every season is something different, even if usually we just finish mid-table. So, I'm excited to see what happens there.
And I know we were going to go to Bundesliga, but I want to ask you one more question, because I know for Rob and myself, he's a little bit of a fan favorite. Your thoughts on Marcelo Bielsa?
Oh, he's changed everything about Leeds United Football Club. Everyone, I mean, if you're not a Leeds fan, you only see the first team and how they've performed. But our under 21 team or under 23 team won the national title this year, and they've played the way that Bielsa plays. The whole club has been structured to it. Just everything. Even he's changed things in the training ground. In his first week, he got players to pick up litter from around the training ground to sort of tell them that, you know, This is what people have to do to earn money to come and watch you play. So this is what it's like. And I don't think a better man could have taken over at Leeds United to sort of fix us up and turn us into a real team, because it's the same squad that finished 14th last year. So it's incredible to see what he's been able to do. And if he can get us promoted, then he's a hero in Leeds for the rest of time.
El Loco, he does some crazy stuff, but he usually he's got a method to his madness. So let's get into it. Let's go back to the Bundesliga in Germany, because obviously with this weekend's results, not so much unexpected in the way for Bayern Munich, for me personally. Leipzig was always going to be a tough out for them. Third place, up until a couple of weeks ago, were actually in position to possibly win the Bundesliga. So this is not a team of pushovers, and hasn't been for a couple of years. To draw 1-1 on the road against them, and then only to have Dortmund almost give it away, up 3-1 going into extra time or stoppage time in the match, to lowly Dusseldorf, a team that was, you know, staring relegation in the face. If I'm not mistaken, they may, they were at least reasonably close to striking distance to Stuttgart before the weekend. This should not have gotten this out of hand, and it almost did for Dortmund. It's kind of a microcosm of their season, but now we have this beautiful final week where we have Mönchengladbach hosting Dortmund in what's going to be a difficult match. And you would think that that might be something where Dortmund might not win, and I understand. But Bayern don't have any layup either, because they're going to have to go to Eintracht Frankfurt a team that is going to try to get into the Champions League spots over Leverkusen, over Mönchengladbach, and I believe, if I remember correctly, even still hold off Wolfsburg. Eintracht can actually be in a position, and I don't know about the goal differential situation, where they could, be, at the end of the weekend, be on the outside of the European spots looking into Hoffenheim. So there's massive swings that can happen here between these two teams facing Dortmund and Munich, and massive swings in and out of the European spots and massive swings at the top of the table. So what is kind of the one thing that you're looking forward to this weekend? Maybe the one match, the one player, the one situation that we would all keep an eye on?
I think, I mean, you described it pretty perfectly there, the madness that's going to be occurring on the weekend. If I had to choose one thing for people to keep an eye on out of everything, it would be Marco Reus coming back from suspension to face his former side in Gladbach with the title on the line. He's, you know, in his last three visits to Borussia Park, he's scored on each occasion. 10 games, 8 wins, 7 goals, 5 assists is his record against Gladbach. So he's a man born for the occasion of facing his former team. And obviously, spurred on by the fact that he's coming back from suspension, having let his side down by getting sent off in the derby. And, of course, needing a win to give themselves any hope of getting the title. But obviously, as you said, the goings-on in Munich are going to be pretty crazy as well. Obviously, Frankfurt let themselves down massively, and they now need a win to make sure that they have any chance of getting in the Champions League spot, which is now also out of their hands because they have to hope for results from Leverkusen and Gladbach to go their way. So all four teams are going to be going for a win. Obviously, the ones that people are concentrating on most are Bayern and Dortmund, but the fact that Gladbach and Frankfurt both have to win to make sure that they get what they want from the season, it just makes it such an incredible end to the season. And, you know, in the Premier League, it was the case of two teams who just could not be beaten. Mm-hmm. And in the Bundesliga, it's the case of two teams who just can't quite get over the line. So it's really, really fantastic. Obviously, for the league, it's the first time since 2009 that the title race has gone to the final day. So it's an added bonus for us that it's gone this far when it usually doesn't, no matter whether it's Bayern or Dortmund, whoever else it is that actually wins the title. It's been a while. And one really weird stat that we found out actually is that this would be the first time since moving into the Allianz Arena that Bayern could win the title by winning at home. Since 2005, they've played at the Allianz. They've won the Bundesliga 10 times. Each of those times, they have clinched it with an away win, which is just bonkers. So, we'll have to wait and see what happens.
You know, this is already sounding much more exciting than what you're getting in England. I mean, oh my God. I mean, you're looking at spots of winning the Bundesliga, qualifying for Europe, missing out of Europe. This is so much better than England. Like, I feel like it's just incredible that not a lot of people are talking about it, Alex. But, you know, just going into that, I mean, obviously Joe mentioned the two tough outings for both the team. Bayern playing against Eintracht Frankfurt, Dortmund taking on Mönchengladbach. Out of the two, I would have to say, you know, obviously no pushovers for any of the two. But who do you think has it more difficult heading into the last day?
I think, you know, well, obviously we planned it, you know, at the Bundesliga so that everyone could be watching this. It's one weekend without any distractions in the Premier League. So hopefully we get some more eyes on it. But for me, because of how they so sadly went out of the Europa League semi-finals and obviously gave themselves a shot in the foot at the weekend losing at home to Mainz, I think Frankfurt are going to be the far tougher team to beat. I mean, no shame on Gladbach, obviously they're a fantastic team, but they've been in and out of form all 2019. Thorgan Hazard just last weekend scored his first goal of the year, in the calendar year that should be. So they've been bang out of form and have been struggling their way to get to this point, whereas Frankfurt have been one of the best stories of European football, I think, across all leagues. So for them, they want to end the season on a high. And obviously being able to go to Munich and do that would be pretty impressive. And they can also take the fact that last year on the final day, even though Bayern had the title run up at that time, Stuttgart went there and won 4-1 last year on the final day. So anything in this league is possible. And Yeah, I think if I had to choose one, it would be Frankfurt. But as you said, both teams are not going to be pushovers in any way.
Definitely. And now you mentioned Frankfurt. It's actually funny that I wanted to go back onto, because there's one player that I think has been standing out on this Frankfurt team that I've really enjoyed, and that's Luka Jovic of the Serbian international. I always say to myself, I'm a fan of him because he's only, like, I think, like 14 days older than me. We're born on the same month in the same year. So I'm like, all right, yeah, I got to be a fan of this guy. I have to be a fan of this guy. I got to support him all the way. But having said that, I mean, there's been a lot of talk recently. You know, I think he just signed his permanent deal to stay at Eintracht Frankfurt to make his move permanent from Benfica. But there's been a lot of rumors been going off of where his future might stand. You know, the biggest one, I think, is obviously that Real Madrid has a deal already placed. So, I mean, Alex, I mean, firstly, what do you think of the sensational Serbian player? And also, what's next for him? What do you think is the future? Does he stay at Frankfurt for another season, especially if they make it into the Champions League? Or do you see him leaving Germany and heading to a much bigger team?
Firstly, I think he's one of the most complete strikers I've ever seen in the Bundesliga, especially at his age. The pure ability on both feet. He has no weak foot at all. He can play left or right equally as well, and his heading is also fantastic, considering that he's not, you know, Sebastian Allaire, 6'4", 6'5". He's a complete striker, he's a complete finisher, just works on instincts. And as you saw in the Europa League semi-final, his teammates trust him, as Ante Rebic celebrated before Jovic even controlled the ball properly. So, I think he's become this sensation. And, you know, we get a lot of stories about one-season wonders. Obviously, Harry Kane overcame that. Mo Salah, even this year, overcame it, in so to speak. And I think Jovic is exactly the same. I think this is just the beginning. He had quite a difficult start to his career. He got forced out of Partizan Belgrade because they needed some money. So he's found his way to Frankfurt. And obviously, the loan deal has worked out well in Frankfurt, getting him for a cheaper price. And so for your next question, I think it's pretty clear that his future lies away with Frankfurt. But I'm quite an optimistic person at the best of times. So I think if Frankfurt do qualify for the Champions League, then Jovic will be wanting to stick around just for 1 year. I think if he goes and proves himself in the Champions League, then who knows what price people are going to have to pay. Obviously, teams are going to be coming in for him this summer, so Frankfurt are going to have to fend off in some interest. But I think the future is endless for him. I think it could go anywhere, really. But yeah, I would really, really, really love to see him play for another year, because obviously, as I said, these one season wonders, you want them to come back and do a second season.
Of course.
So yeah, if he does that before moving away, I'll be a very happy man.
You know, Joe, and obviously I'll pose the same question to you, because obviously I believe the price tag that Madrid was putting on it was like 50 million or something like that. And you know, look, given the circumstances that are coming in, obviously on the last weekend, they have a contention for a Champions League spot. You know, you also have these rumors coming out of obviously other big teams. But you know, if you're Luka Jovic in this case, I mean, what would you do heading into next season? Do you stick around and hope that Eintracht Frankfurt obviously make the Champions League and play there, or do you, you know, listen to big deals and achieve, you know, childhood dreams and play for one of the biggest teams in the world?
This is the million-dollar question. I mean, figuratively and literally, right? I mean, right now, the figure that I heard, Rob, was actually 60 million euro is what they were offering Eintracht, Real Madrid was offering Eintracht Frankfurt for him. You've got a situation that he's going to go into where it's a clean slate, if you think about it. Real Madrid has had a miserable season. I don't think they would expect 20 to 30 goals out of Luka Jovic this season at Real Madrid. So from that standpoint, for me, this is the right time to go there, because the expectations, the bar is set just a little lower for him coming in. I think Benzema is, you know, for the season he's had a decent season, but you're going to replace Karim Benzema. I think you'll do well at doing that. I think you'll have the support of a lot of the players there. They're building younger. You've got a guy like Zidane who garners respect in the locker room. I think the timing is right for Luka Jovic to go to Real Madrid now. The risk is, do you stay another season at Eintracht? Does it not turn out as well? You always have the injury question that many players will worry about. And the 60 million price tag could go down to 40 million, could go down to 30 million, could not be a price tag at all. The player that I want to point out to is Andrea Belotti at Torino. There was one point where they had $100 million or 100 million euro price tag on his head. Then he's taken a step off in quality. and in production. And now we're not even hearing of those numbers anymore on Belotti because of it. So you run that risk. And for me, as much as I would like to see him stay at Frankfurt just because it suits him, he does very, very well there. He has a strike partner in Sebastian Allé that we talked about as well, that I think he works well with. I think in the end, when many of these decisions and these players these days are monetary in nature, I think it is the absolute right time for him to run over to Real Madrid and start his next chapter of his career there.
Definitely. I think getting a clean slate, like you said, Joe, would be great for him, and especially with different expectations. Obviously, a team like Real Madrid, who aren't accustomed to rebuilding, I think this would be the perfect opportunity for him to take, to carpe diem, seize the day, I would say.
Yeah, Robin,
and from there.
And that's my point, is let's say this move happened. Let's say Luka Jovic had this season last year, right, where he had it in 2017, 2018, and then moved on the heels of the Champions League, on the third Champions League final for Real Madrid, moves on the heels of that championship and is at Real Madrid now, okay? This is a massive failure, and it goes on squarely on his shoulders. Madrid have already failed. So now is a great time because you can't have that pinned on you. You can only go up, and I think this is why it's a great time for him.
Definitely, definitely. And, going into stateside real quick, we're going to obviously talk about one of the teams that are going to fight for this title. Two players, actually, we'd like to mention for you, Alex, and one that's close to home for both of us. Obviously, I'm mentioning Jadon Sancho, and I'm mentioning Christian Pulisic. Obviously, Sancho has had a tremendous season at Dortmund. I mean, 18 assists. It's hard to believe this kid's only 19, and he's already done so well. I mean, one of the arguments that has been made so far, I think, for young English players, you look at the Premier League spending so much on tremendous talent from all around the world, that perhaps they're not focusing too much on the youth from their own country. I mean, we have the exceptions. You have, you have Phil Foden at City. You have Marcus Rashford at Manchester United. You have many different players from all around England, for example. But you look at a case like Jadon Sancho. Obviously he was playing at the City Academy, and many people would say he took a risk and went to Dortmund just because of, the opportunities that he perhaps would have gotten that he couldn't get at Manchester City. So I just want your thoughts on him first before I go to my next question. I mean, just the rise of Jadon Sancho, and what's next for this talented player?
I think first and foremost, the simple thing is that if he had stayed at City, we wouldn't be talking about Jadon Sancho right now. So for him, it's been a fantastic move, and he's said in lots of interviews that his mates back at home, teammates, whatever, message him saying, oh, how is it? What's it like? Obviously, Reece Nelson's over here as well. He hasn't had quite the same success, but he did score 6 or 7 goals in the first half of the season in a really good spell. So he's also impressed in patches, but nothing is compared to Jadon Sancho. Even, I think, there hasn't been a foreign player who's come over and made such an impact so quickly in the Bundesliga, let alone an English one. But, he's not even the first. Like, Adam Müller-Lückman came over last year to Leipzig and did really well on loan. Obviously, Reece Oxford's had a couple of spells that haven't been quite amazing because he's been a defender, but he's impressed enough that people keep wanting him to come back. And I really, really do hope that it inspires some English guys to come over. So, obviously, a lot of the rumours that we've seen about Callum Hudson-Odoi coming to Bayern Munich, there's just been so much drama with that. Obviously, he's now injured, which is a really bad shame because he probably won't be able to be fit for the start of the season, I presume, with an Achilles injury. So that brings that up into drama. But overall, I think English players should take far more risks. It's one of the only nationalities where the players tend to stay at home, even though, as you mentioned, the Premier League is home to some of the best foreign players in the world and is such a difficult place for any player to sort of become a first-team regular wherever you're from. So I think, as I said, Jadon Sancho wouldn't be even an England international probably at this time. We obviously don't know if he'd have been given the chances, but it's highly unlikely in his position that he'd have gotten any chances at Man City. So I just hope he's a benchmark for everyone. I hope we see more English players not just come to the Bundesliga, but go abroad full stop. We actually had a Leeds player, Ronaldo Vieira, who's gone over to Sampdoria. I haven't been able to keep up with exactly how well he's done, but I'm seeing that he's playing quite a lot of games, and it's just fantastic because England at the moment have got such a inspiring and talented young generation of players, and why not add 3 years in Italy, 3 years in Germany to your CV and your experience, just to even build you as a person? Because, you know, you don't get these chances for such a career like this again. And Jadon Sancho will be able to remember however many years it is at Dortmund and say, you know, yeah, I played in front of that yellow wall and I had the best season of my career at Dortmund, potentially. So, yeah, I think just take a chance. You never know what happens.
And obviously, it's kind of a bit of a foreshadowing into another player that is close to our hearts here in the United States, and that's Christian Pulisic. Obviously, you know, he's also kind of been the benchmark, I think, of other players coming in from, you know, not just MLS, but I think American players in general. You know, you look at players like Weston McKennie, you'll get Tyler Adams, you know, you'll get Josh Sargent. I mean, it's been... He's been kind of the trailblazer, and to say that to a 20-year-old player is just incredible. And now he's heading off to this big move at Chelsea. It's still going to be debated on what's going to happen, because there's always the rumors of him perhaps being in as a replacement for Eden Hazard, or is looking to be heading to Real Madrid. You know, obviously, Pulisic's replacement is being reported to be Thorgan Hazard, as ironically as that looks. Funny how things work out, doesn't it? So it's just... I mean, Alex, I mean, I'll just ask you this period. I mean, you know, he's been someone that we've been following, that we keep close to our hearts. Obviously, a big hope of hopefully a generation of American players that are hoping to bring us back to hopefully a bigger things after failure to make the World Cup. And, you know, at 20 years old, this expectation is going to be tremendous now heading into a big team like Chelsea and probably the best league in the world at this moment. But How is his legacy perceived now in Dortmund? You know, spending 3 years there, obviously breaking a lot of records. And number two, if Thorgan Hazard goes into replace him at Borussia Dortmund, how would that be able? How will that be perceived over there in Dortmund?
I think first and foremost, Pulisic's hugely respected in Germany and the Bundesliga for just taking everything in his stride. Even Bundesliga fans have recognised that he's got a country's hopes and dreams on his shoulders, basically, as a 20-year-old, which is just remarkable. And as you said, he's brought over so many young players from America, inspired them to come over. There's six Bundesliga-based players in the US under-20 squad for the World Cup as well. So just the what he's done for the Bundesliga and for American soccer, as you guys call it, obviously football for me, but what he's done for it in such a short space of time, 5 years, is remarkable. Obviously, he's going to Chelsea on the back of not his best season by any stretch, but he's ending it very well. 2 goals in 2 games, and he looks an inspired figure, trying to earn a title to cap off a dream 5 years in Dortmund. So his legacy is widely respected. The fans obviously gave him a really warm farewell. And, you know, he even inspired Jadon Sancho. He's come out and said that he saw what Pulisic did and thought, I can do the same. And he's come and proven that as well. So Pulisic is an inspiration to young players across all nations, I like to think, who can go from his dream. He had a really nice interview with Dortmund's Ruhr Nachrichten newspaper, where he spoke about a school teacher telling him that, you know, you shouldn't think about too much about being a football player, because it's just so hard to do it. And then he said, I'll come back in 7 or 8 years and we'll talk about it then. And so he needs to go back and do that. But obviously, he's got his own career to work on with Chelsea, which is hugely exciting. And with Hazard, obviously, lots of rumours bouncing around. I think it would be a fantastic move for Dortmund and for Hazard as well. I think it's the right time. I think he's 26, 27. I believe he's 26. Mm-hmm. So he's just, you know, getting towards that age where he's starting to hit the prime, and I think he fits Dortmund's system perfectly, and it's quite scary to even consider that Dortmund could have a Sancho, Royce, Hazard front three behind Goetze, Alcacer, or anyone else that comes in. So, very exciting prospects for Hazard and Dortmund and Pulisic. Everyone's quite happy with how it's worked out. There's obviously, in Dortmund's past, it's worked out a lot worse with players leaving to Premier League clubs, or even to clubs in the Bundesliga. So I think everyone's still got smiles on their faces after Dortmund, after Pulisic's 5 years.
Sure. Alex, I want to jump into the bottom of the table now because we've neglected it here a little bit. And I really want to look at Schalke. I want to look at Schalke, though, because Schalke is a team that has had a massively disappointing season. Sacking Domenico Tedesco back in March, they've appointed Hub Stevens as a caretaker manager. And now word is that at the end of the season, they are going to bring in David Wagner from Huddersfield as their new head coach. I always like to keep an eye on Schalke, especially because of Weston McKennie, who is out for the rest of the season with his ankle injury that he suffered on international duty. But what do you expect out of Schalke? What other changes can Schalke make besides the head coaching position that will get them back into the top five or six in this league and have them challenging for European spots?
I mean, it's funny that we've seen, because we saw this sort of thing happen with Dortmund in Klopp's final year, obviously not quite to this drastic measure. They got back and finished, I think, sixth or seventh in the league and actually got back into Europe. But for a while, they were down the bottom. And I don't think Schalke are going to be able to bounce back as quickly as Dortmund did. But they obviously, as you've said, they've got the likes of McKennie and other young players who've been able to get a chance in this team this year, obviously with experiments going on from Tedesco and Stevens trying to inspire something. So there's hope for Schalke. But I really see McKennie as the sort of leader of the next generation of Schalke players. He seems like the kind of guy who wants to stay there and create his own legacy with Schalke. I've been able to meet him a few times and he's a fantastic guy and he's so in love with this club. It's fantastic and the fans love him as well. So I really feel that David Wagner can try and hopefully build a team around him. Obviously, as we all know, Wagner built a team out of nothing from Huddersfield. And as weird as it is to say, considering the size of Schalke at the moment, the squad is so disbanded and sort of, you know, you could quite easily look at it and see a lot of players that you think, they're not quite ready for it for next year. I'd rather see someone else come in. And sort of David Wagner's in this position now where he's coming into a club and maybe has to do the same thing that he did at Huddersfield and build a new squad and bring it back up, which is why I think they brought him in. But yeah, as I mentioned, there's lots of youth coming through, so there's hope. Obviously, Schalke is one of the best youth academies in Europe. We've seen it with the likes of Ozil and Neuer coming through. But yeah, it's just been such a bad season. It really has. They've been one of the worst teams in the Bundesliga. And as harsh as it might sound, they've got quite lucky that there's been three teams below them that have played even worse than them, because on another year it could have been them possibly in a relegation playoff or even further down. So yeah, there's a big project on for David Wagner, but he's done it before, so let's see if he can do it in Germany in the Bundesliga as well.
Certainly. Last couple of questions here. Obviously, Bayern Munich and Dortmund are going to finish in the top four for the Champions League spots. Leipzig already secured their position. Which team between Mönchengladbach, and just looking at this quickly as to who can catch Gladbach, between Gladbach, Leverkusen, Frankfurt, and Wolfsburg, it looks like, which one of those teams, which one of those four teams will be the fourth team in the Champions League?
That is a fantastic question. Thank you so much for that. I actually want them to, because of the players that they have in their squad and the sort of season that they've had in Europe. I'm going to say that Frankfurt are going to pull something off at Bayern. As weird as it is to say, even though, you know, Leverkusen go to Hertha, so there's a much better chance of them getting a result, which they probably will, to be honest. But I just feel like there's something left in this Frankfurt fairy tale this season. So I'm going to stick my neck out and say that Frankfurt are going to get fourth place.
That is a massive answer, because it almost answers my final question, which is between Bayern Munich and Borussia Dortmund, which team raises the trophy this weekend?
I, as I said, I really feel like this season has been such an up and down, non-stop drama season in the Bundesliga. Even if you haven't followed it all season, tune in for this weekend, because I really think that something different is going to happen. And I honestly think that Dortmund are gonna do it. I think they can pull something off at Gladbach, which will actually be less of a surprise than if Frankfurt pull it off against the Bayern in Munich. So, but I honestly think that there's something left. There is something left, and even if Bayern win it in the last minute, it'll have, you know, lived up to all our expectations of a big final day drama. So I'm gonna say that I think Dortmund are going to win it, but I'm also going to say that whatever happens, there's going to be late drama.
Well, let me ask you this. Was this race better than in England?
I mean, I work for the Bundesliga, so I honestly, personally think that this has been a better race merely because the guys in Liverpool and Manchester City, obviously they've been out of this world. You can argue that they've been the two best teams in Europe in their domestic leagues, you know. So the performance levels that they've had is just remarkable and honestly far better than Bayern and Dortmund, because at certain points in this season, you've sort of looked at them and thought, do you actually want to win the Bundesliga? But with that, it's just brought so many incredible moments where Bayern draw at Nuremberg, Koma misses a last-minute one-on-one, Dortmund drawing at Nuremberg, losing at Augsburg, losing the derby against Schalke after such a woeful season they've had. And as much as you can say both teams don't want to win it, they clearly and obviously do want to win it. But it's just the Bundesliga, and anyone can beat anyone. And even Bayern Munich have struggled this season. And honestly, I think the Bundesliga one has been better, having watched it all the way through. And even better than Premier League.
I'm gonna actually add to your answer, Alex, because I agree. I think this race overall in general in this league has been better than the race that we saw in the EPL. And my exhibit A for this is something that you probably had a hand in. If you follow the Bundesliga on Twitter, they have put out, I want to say over the last 5 or 6 weeks, they've put out a chart of all the teams and where those teams can finish based on results on the weekend. Some teams could literally have 10 place swings because this race in all places, top to bottom, has been so tight over the season. You could see a team that was third place literally at the end of the weekend be in 10th. And it's incredible to me. I don't think we've ever seen anything like that in any of the other leagues. And I was thinking about, why do we see that? And I think part of it is the fact that this is an 18-team league versus a 20-team league. So you're not getting team 19 and 20 contributing to the wins and losses of the season, which means that you've condensed that quality into 18 teams instead. So I think because of that, we see this type of fluctuation, this type of ability for a 10th place team to suddenly be second in the league based on 1 week's results. And for me, that is what's really been massive about this. Even tonight, we're talking about a team that is fourth, could easily finish eighth once the results are over. And that just, it boggles the mind that this far into the season, 33, 34 matches in, we have teams that could have that big of a swing. It really means nothing is decided. And then my exhibit B is the fact that when we ask about Bayern Munich and Borussia Dortmund as to who will win, we don't have to ask that question. We can ask about Eintracht Frankfurt and are they going to make the Champions League, because it actually directly affects that title race at the top. So
that's it.
Yeah,
that just makes it better. I feel as if though many people need to understand that. I think, you know, we have people that are perhaps more citing the Premier League, you know, citing La Liga because of the players there, even to Serie A to an extent. But yeah, I just think that if you look at all of everything that's happening in the Bundesliga, yes, the stereotype's always going to be Bayern, it's always going to win it every year, and it's always Dortmund fighting it. But there's also more to that, you know. For every Arsenal and Chelsea battle for top four, you know, you have your Eintracht Frankfurt and you have your RB Leipzig. You know, you have those type of stories, and I think those stories that, you know, could implement the top just makes it even more special. And I really hope that for this weekend, it's going to be a surprising and drama-filled weekend.
No doubt about it. So, Alex, thank you for joining us. I know it's late where you are, and I really appreciate you giving us all this time. And we have to make sure that we don't leave it again so long, and we'll have you back again very, very soon.
Not at all. I'm not working tomorrow, so I'm really happy to be up late. Maybe we can talk after the weekend so we can digest what on earth has happened.
No doubt about it. Let's definitely do it, mate. Thanks a lot again.
That sounds good. Take care, guys.
And that was Alex Schaefer from the Bundesliga. Fantastic stuff. Rob, I think we went a little bit longer than what we wanted to do with Alex, so I do want to talk about La Liga, because this weekend is the last La Liga week of the season as well. Obviously, Barcelona has won the title. Atleti has locked up second place. Real Madrid has won third place. That is all official. The race here is for fourth place. And Getafe on the weekend losing to Barca really damaged their chances, losing 2-0, with Valencia moving into fourth place, even though they're tied on points with a 3-1 victory over Alaves, has really left a lot of it to be you know, to be played for. Sevilla this weekend also, they end up with a draw on the weekend versus Atleti, but they are 2 points back of Valencia and Getafe to possibly pick up that last Champions League spot. We also look at seventh place with Athletic Club winning against Celta Vigo. They are only 3 points ahead of Real Sociedad and Espanyol, who have a chance to get into the Europa League positions as well. So there is a lot to play for here. And just eyeballing down at the bottom, Girona currently 3 points behind Celta Vigo. Celta Vigo going to need a win this weekend over, or a win or a draw at home to Rayo Vallecano, who has already been relegated. There's a lot of moving pieces here, also in the relegation zone as well as the championship positions, with Barca already having secured the top spot. What are your thoughts on this weekend coming up in La Liga?
Yeah, no, it's a really an interesting race, I would say, perhaps for the final spots. I think it's been, and Getafe has been really a sensational story to see. You know, the fact that they've been fighting for that top spot over teams like Valencia, Sevilla, and others. It's been great to see them play, but you know that you have that, like you said, you have that race for the final Champions League spot. Valencia, Getafe, Sevilla, you know, even to excite Bilbao. Well, they could obviously try to do something there, but it's been great. It's been great to see. I think we still it's going to be interesting because, you know, Sevilla, Bilbao, I think that's one of the toughest games out of all of them, I think, that are fighting for the spots. But yeah, honestly, I think if Getafe can make it to the Champions League, that would be a sensational story. Personally, I think just because of the budget that the team has and all the disadvantages that they could have, I would love to see it go there. But it's going to be tough. I mean, you know, they do have to play a really good Villarreal team. Mm. You know, a Villarreal team that, you know, just got off of relegation. Actually, they were actually around the zone of relegation. They just fought it off. So it's gonna be really interesting to see. I can't wait. It's great. I mean, for everything that's happening at the top, I have to say, Joe, maybe an unpopular opinion on this, but is it me or are the races for those Champions League and like European spots much better than what you see at the top?
They usually are, and the reason is because we seem to have the same teams winning the titles in these leagues. You know, sometimes we get a nice close race like we saw in England this weekend, like we're going to see in Germany this weekend. But, you know, we're talking about Getafe possibly getting in. They're 2 points separating three teams there for that last Champions League spot. That's a race. We talk about Italy, Atalanta, Inter, Milan. There's a bunch of spots there. We have Lille, who just secured their Champions League spot yesterday. And so Lyon is still fighting for that last spot to play in. There's still spots to be held there. And those spots, because you have more teams that are fighting for it, tend to make those races and those matches toward the end of the season just as exciting as, let's say, the relegation battles at the bottom, because you have multiple teams fighting to stay out of those spots in these cases. You know, and I think that's why those races tend to become a little more interesting, where Barca's been champion now for 2 weeks. We really haven't doubted that. So there's something else that we have to look forward to, I think, and not all the chips have fallen in these different leagues. Last question, Rob, for you. Valencia, Getafe, Sevilla, which team gets into the Champions League?
Ooh, it's tough. You know what? Getafe.
I hope Getafe gets in, too. I think it's going to be Valencia, though. Valladolid, really, you know, they've mailed it in at this point this season. They're already relegated to Segunda. They've only scored 39 goals in 37 matches. They're averaging a goal a game. I think it's going to be Valencia, unfortunately. But I am hoping it's Getafe, because I'm really hoping for that Getafe-Atalanta group in the Champions League next season.
Yeah,
so,
no, totally. You know,
so we're going to definitely 100%. Need that. So let's table the coach talk for next week. And one of the other things we were going to talk about, but the draw hasn't happened as of yet, is the Copa Libertadores. So we're going to talk about coaching, and we're going to talk about Copa Libertadores next week, Rob. So let's do that. I want to go back to the trivia question. Obviously, with England holding all four spots in the Champions League and Europa League finals, how many times has it happened in the Champions League era that two teams from the same country have contested the final? How many times from the Europa League? And has it ever happened that two from the Champions League and two from the Europa League happened in the same year?
Okay, so the answer to your final question is no. This is the first time that we had four teams contesting two finals from the same country.
That is correct. We had... we had it happen twice in Europa and twice in Champions League, where it was year after year after year after year, but it never happened at the same time. So that's correct on one. Champions League, how many times?
Okay, so I'm going to try and go in order for Champions League. I know the first one that I could remember off the top of my head, I believe it's 2000, Real Madrid-Valencia?
Correct.
Gotcha.
I was going to say, you only had to give me a number, by the way. I was going to give you a number.
I'm going to go in order. I'm going to give you a much more easier. 2003, Juventus-Milan.
Yep.
2008, Manchester United-Chelsea.
Yep.
2013, Dortmund against Bayern, correct. Ironically enough. 2014, Real Madrid against Atleti.
Correct.
2016, Real Madrid against Atleti.
Correct.
And then obviously this one, 2019.
So six times in the Champions League era. Never Barcelona, by the way.
Nope, never Barcelona.
How about in the Europa League?
Since
98.
This one's harder. I think I know two off the top of my head. Is the number two?
It's more than two.
It's more than two. Okay. The two I could name off the top of my head. I know it's Porto Braga.
Porto Braga. Yeah, the Portuguese one. I know that in 2011. That was interesting. I didn't know about that one.
Bilbao, Atletico Madrid.
2012. It happened in consecutive years.
Now, this is the hard one.
Another Spanish tie and another... And an Italian tie, so there's four total.
An Italian tie, okay, that's a hard one.
And the Italian tie is actually the first time it went from going home on home into one match.
Inter Lazio, 1998.
Yes, sir. And the last one?
I know Sevilla was in this one. I don't know who they played, though. Sevilla, Valencia?
Nope, it's a Catalan derby. The other half.
Espanol.
Sevilla, Espanol, 2007. So, in the Champions League, it has happened six times. In the Europa League, it has happened four times. Like Rob said, Real Madrid-Valencia. Real Madrid 3-0 over Valencia in 2000. Milan and Juve, 0-0 draw. Milan on penalties. Man U-Chelsea, 1-1 2008. Man U threw on penalties. Bayern Munich, 2-1 over Dortmund in 2013. Real Madrid, 4-1 over Atleti in 2014. 2016, Real Madrid over Atleti. Completed an extra time after 1-1 draw in the Europa League 98, which is the first year they did not play home on home. Inter 3, Lazio 0. 2007, Sevilla Espanyol 2-2 draw, won an extra time by Sevilla. Porto in 2011 over Sporting Braga 1-0, and 2012 Atleti 3-0 over Athletic Bilbao. Now you can add to that list Liverpool Spurs in the Champions League 2019, Chelsea Arsenal 2019. That is the trivia, my friend. Let's, without anything else on the docket, actually, let me give you the matches for the week, and then we'll go out. So, Bundesliga this weekend, Bayern Munich, Eintracht Frankfurt, Saturday, 9:30 a.m., which is the final match day of the season, and much, much on the line there. In La Liga, we're going to give you two matches, Getafe-Villarreal, Saturday at 2 p.m., with Getafe trying to get back into the Champions League. And the other matchup, Sevilla-Athletic Bilbao, Saturday at 2 p.m. It's a European match for both teams. MLS, Saturday night, the Philadelphia Union-Seattle Sounders, 7:30 p.m. on Saturday. On Sunday, we're going to give you two Italian matches, Juve-Atalanta at 2:30. Atalanta still trying to get into that Champions League. Atalanta have not lost at home since December, and they haven't lost a match since, I believe, Rob, it was March 30th, which is crazy. The other match in Italy, Napoli-Inter, Sunday at 2:30 p.m., and obviously Inter trying to get that last Champions League spot. And in Ligue 1, we have a relegation battle. Monaco-Amiens, Sunday at 3 p.m., both teams trying to stay out of that spot. Monaco sitting currently dangerously close. I believe they're 3 points out, and then their season finishes the week after. So, with all of that in mind, Rob, let's hit the closing music. And there we go. So... for episode 242 of Low Limit Football, special thanks again to Alex Schaefer for joining us. Next week, we will look ahead to the final weeks in Italy and France. We'll recap the final weeks in Germany and in Spain. We're going to take a deeper look at the Copa Libertadores matchups for the round of 16, which come out in about 40 minutes. And we're going to take a look at the coaching carousel in Europe as well. So for episode 242 of Low Limit Football, I am Joe Uccello.
I'm Roberto Rojas.
Thanks for listening, everyone, and good night.